Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review was heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit the webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, about news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on contracts. Where is it located in the law when we come back? You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity, and we've been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions of our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals. Paid professionals like bankers, and they manage our financial affairs, or doctors who manage and treat our health problems. And then there are the lawyers to treat our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. That's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish, it's time to learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by these paid professionals. And regaining our power of attorney is the single most important step in regaining our capacity, our rights, our liberties, and our duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, just write for my free general law CD package. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to the website and send an email. And that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and then send an email request. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about contracts. Contracts that in reality have been converted into laws. How in the world do these laws, which stem from contracts, get turned into contracts, or contracts turned into laws? What does contract and law have? What is it that makes the two work together, or why are they synonymous terms? Well, this week we've been running over a number of sources of information, the legal dictionaries, legal encyclopedias, cases, case law, codes, statutes, treatises written by lawyers and law school professors. We looked at adhesion contracts, the definition of contract and license in the dictionary. And the connecting links are inescapable. And the question that was asked by Raymond, he said, well, can you show me any place in the law? And the answer is, yeah, it's everywhere in the law. But without a direct statement that says Social Security is a contract. Now, that definition I don't find in the Social Security Act, which, remember, is entitled 42, Section 301 through 335. However, the conclusion's inescapable. And, in fact, I'm going to cite you a few quotations here from a neat book written by a fellow named George Mercier. George Mercier. And it's called Invisible Contracts. You might still be able to get a copy of the book, and you can see if I've got his address here. Yeah, it's 100 Sand Ringham Drive, Rochester, New York, and the zip code was 14610. That's 14610. And there was a phone number. Now, this book was written December 31st, 1985. And the phone number, 716-381-7031. That's 716-381-7031. It may not be any good anymore. But Mercier wrote a pretty successful, a pretty comprehensive treatise on this thing of contract and law. It's well documented, probably 15, 20 chapters in here. I didn't count them, but and I've used that book over the years to go to the sources, the cases, you know, like Diefendorf versus Galay, Hale versus Hinkle, Wickard versus Filburn, and so on. You know, in Wickard versus Filburn, the Supreme Court said it's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes. Well, the subsidies that farmers receive come from the contracts that they make with the Department of Agriculture. So the Department of Agriculture creates a contract pursuant to a law, statute, rule, regulation, custom, usage, or practice enacted by Congress so that they can suck you farmers into agricultural legislation and regulation like they did with Filburn. Now, the stories, Ray, are endless. But we haven't quite got to the end of them yet, because in the Bible, in the common law, the law that comes from the Mosaic law that we now call the common law today, in the Bible it's called the Old Covenant. And under the Old Covenant, there are literally hundreds of connecting statements and usages of the word covenant, which is simply a contract, that in the Old Testament we call the Old Contract, and the New Testament is called the New Contract. It is contractual in nature. In fact, God made a contract with the people of Israel out at Mount Sinai. He stood up on the mountain and he said, "Hey, pay attention now, boys and girls, I'm going to pitch you a deal." And he made them a tender offer. They accepted, and I mentioned that that acceptance is in Exodus 24:7-8, I believe it is, where it says, "All that the Eternal has said, we will do and be obedient." Be obedient to what? Be obedient to this law. Here's a couple of three examples. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, verse 13, it says, "And he declared unto you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, even 10 commandments, and he wrote them upon 2 tables of stone." The 10 commandments are terms and conditions of a contract for which it was offered to us, we accepted it, there was a time frame forever, and there is consideration on the contract. It's called reciprocity. There are 33 articulable benefits that we receive that are articulated in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, first 13 or 14 verses of those two chapters. Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28 is the reciprocity on the contract. In verse 23, there's another statement in here. It says, "Take heed to yourselves, lest you forget the covenant, lest you forget the contract of the Eternal your God, which he made with you, and make you a graven image or the likeness of anything which the Eternal your God has forbidden you." We agreed that we would not serve any other sovereigns. Well, now that, of course, was 3,000 years ago. Now we serve the United States and Florida and Texas. We serve all kinds of gods, sovereigns, lawmakers that make our laws for us and sign contracts like driver's license and birth certificate and Social Security. And then in verse 31, starting in verse 29, but he said, "But if from thence you shall seek the Eternal your God and shall find him, and if you seek him with all of your heart and with all of your soul, when you're in tribulation and all of these things are come upon you, even in the latter days, if you turn to the Eternal your God and shall be obedient to his voice, because the Eternal your God is a merciful God, he will not forsake you and neither destroy you, nor forget the covenant, nor forget the contract of your fathers which he swore unto them." Now we have a contract. Those of us that practice the Mosaic law are under contract. One of the terms and conditions of the contract is that we're entitled to 70 years. That's 25,550 days of life. I'm 66 years old. I will not die until I'm 70. Well, at least if I'm practicing this law, I won't. Now, I'm the oldest living Gordon in 5 generations. All the rest of them died in their 40s and 50s. I had one grandfather. He lived to be age 61. The longest living Gordon in the last four generations to him, or three generations to him, was 61, died in 1951. So I looked at that and I said, gee, I'd like to collect my full 70 and a 70 if I'm strong. I'd like to live to be 70, 75, 80 years old. Most of us Gordons die in our 40s and 50s. I said, what do I have to do in order to live to be 70 years old? Well, I have to practice the terms and conditions of this law. I did that. I'm doing that. I don't eat pig for that reason. I practice Leviticus 11, Deuteronomy 14. I practice the holy days and the Sabbaths and etc. In fact, I find that this law is easy to practice. There are less standards, statutes, judgments, and commandments in the Mosaic Law than there are in your traffic code in your state. You people with driver's licenses in your pocket practice more laws than I do under the entire biblical code. Isn't that just special? There's only 133 total laws in the Scripture. 133 total laws. They're encompassed by 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. And yeah, there's a law that says thou shalt not commit adultery, and it wrecked my sex life. There's just no doubt about that. I can't go down to Flo's whorehouse, and I can't pick up a chick. But, you know, that's the price you pay for living to be 70 or 80 years old. It protects you from VD, is what it does. People that don't practice adultery don't get VD. VD is the penalty that you pay for the violation of the law that says thou shalt not commit adultery. It's a choice that you have to make. And we all make choices. We made a choice when we got our social security numbers. We made choices when we got our driver's license, birth certificate, and marriage license. Those are choices that we make. Now, you might not have got your birth certificate, but your daddy got it for you, or your mommy, and you got one for your children. And the question that I'm asking is, why'd you do that? Well, because it was everybody else did it. And besides that, nobody explained the contractual relationship between law and these permits, these contracts, these licensing applications that we make. Well, George Mercier wrote a pretty comprehensive book. What chapter is this now? The Invisible Contracts, the Employment Contracts. That's about chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, chapter 6. And he starts off, he says, through the beneficial use of the taxable franchise like Social Security, a lot of folks don't realize it, but the presentation of a Social Security number to your employer is a contract with the king to pay taxes and an acknowledgement of personal status as a taxpayer. Quite a statement. Do you know that in order for you to be a taxpayer, you have to have a Social Security number or a taxpayer identification number? They did it in 1964. Your Social Security number, by act of Congress, became your taxpayer identification number. You see, you thought that that was a retirement program. Well, it is. It is a retirement program, but it's more than that. And it has some invisible links to it. Invisible links that you haven't been told about. So a question arises, well, how do you get out of this? How do you get out of Social Security? Well, you have to rescind the contract. And he says the answer, this is not an easy thing to do. Clever administrative rulemaking forced on employers has tightened employers up, and they have the money that we want. So in an employee-employer relationship, the factual setting as a first step is first necessary to terminate all written attachments of the king's equity jurisdiction that you previously initiated with the king. So if you want out of it, you got to rescind the contract. You know, if you join the army, you've got an enlistment contract. You want to get out of the Uniform Code of Military Justice, you've got to get a discharge from the army. You know, it's a hell of a lot easier to stay out of the military than it is to get out after you're in. But that's the way the game is played. Now, if you're in Social Security, it's not impossible to get out, but it's more difficult to get out than it is to stay out. I had a little bit more to say over here. There was a neat story over here that dealt with state-created juristic benefits. I wanted to read you a paragraph out of that. And we'll take a look at some famous statements made by some very famous people in the world concerning money and banking and law, contract. Under state-created juristic benefits, by experiencing state-created juristic benefits, such as through the vehicle of corporations, by being shareholders, directors, and officers. In 1910, the Supreme Court ruled that if a prince creates some type of a profit or gain situation in commerce, and remember that the king's commerce is a closed private domain belonging to government, then the king can participate in taxing that profit or gain that the prince created. That's these adhesion contracts we talked about. So when state-created benefits are accepted by you, then the commercial enrichment that you experience within the state franchise is very much within the taxing power of the United States government, and that is correct law. Additionally, the king can tax other state-created commercial benefits that are experienced by others, like attorneys and accountants, who as special interest groups use the police powers of the state for their own private enrichment by setting up shared monopolies and then experiencing higher revenue than otherwise obtainable under laissez-faire free market entry without restrictions on new lower price competitors entering into their trade. So this game of using penal statutes to create shared enrichment monopolies is quite old. And yet, look around you today and see how many bleeding heart folks there are who really want to believe that line, that the government is their friend, just somehow. And also fall for the fraudulent line that such a monopoly is for their own protective good. By keeping all of those evil quacks and vile frauds and assorted degenerate incompetence out of the legal and the medical professions. Although we might not be too philosophically sympathetic with the manipulative use of legislatures to create monopolies and the tortfeasance that is thrown at us in the adverse secondary circumstances flowing from their operations as a matter of law, creating game rules for voluntary players in king's commerce is largely immune from constitutional restraints. All right, let's regurgitate that. Let's take a look at an example here. You know, there was a time when you could go out and practice medicine here in America. I mean, we had people running around called patent medicine salesmen. And no doubt a lot of them, probably most of them, were a bunch of frauds and quacks. And he comes along in his medicine wagon, and he's selling Dr. Juniper's little liver pills or something. And he says, God, this will cure cancer and rheumatism and arthritis, and if there's something wrong with you, why... you just take this little liver pill and it'll cure it. And so people bought that kind of crap. And indeed, in some cases, it was actually harmful. But there weren't any laws, rules, or regulations. Well, then one day somebody woke up and they said, look, we've got some real medical doctors over here, some real guys that we would like to install as the medical profession. And we'd like to eliminate all these quacks out here. I guess the theory was that the people out here couldn't sort out these quacks. And so they go to the legislature and they say, well, we need laws to establish the medical profession. So the legislature says, well, okay, we'll give you a medical law that establishes the profession. And then we need to have standards. And so they came up with standards. Well, now we need to have a licensing program. So they came up with a licensing program. And now we need to have penalties to punish people that aren't licensed. And so that's where you're at today. So let's just try this out. George Gordon goes out and he opens up Gordon's Medical Clinic. And I'm going to compete with Dr. Walsh down the street. And you know what Dr. Walsh down the street is going to do? Well, they're going to come out here and they're going to arrest me and jail me, prosecute me. And why is that? Contract law. Contract law. It isn't constitutional or unconstitutional, it's contractual. That's what the bottom line is. Contractual. You see, the legislature comes along and they say, well, we're going to use the police power to protect the public at large from quacks and frauds. So we're going to establish this monopoly over here called the medical profession, and we're going to establish standards for getting into the medical profession. Gordon, you didn't follow those standards, therefore we're going to punish you. The doctor, you see, he has a contract, he has a license, he can go out here and he can practice that. And so this is why the professions are so popular. And this is why you want to send your sons and daughters to college so that they can go to college and come out a licensed professional and they make more money. Well, of course they make more money because the government creates monopolies. There's no competition. The reason that medical costs are sky high and going higher is because what you have here is a closed monopoly. And that's what monopolies are for. Monopolies are for the express purpose of making lots of money and keeping any competition out. That's why you can't practice law without a license. Lawyers don't want any competition. Doctors don't want competition. See, in America, we used to have freedom. I mean, if you want to go out and practice medicine, go practice. You want to practice law, go practice. And whatever the market will bear is what the market will bear. Well, why would you pay a lawyer $200 an hour when you could hire me for $30? See the problem? And somebody would say, well, you know, Gordon for $30 is just cheap trash. Well, that's a decision that the marketplace makes. Now you don't have a marketplace. You have a government institution called the Bar Association and the police powers of the state. They decide who are the lawyers and who aren't. And then, of course, this closed monopoly decides what the price is going to be. There's no competition. Well, I guess you got competition. You can go to lawyer A for $200 an hour or lawyer B for $150 an hour, and you have to have a lawyer to make your appearance in court. That's what you're told. It's not true, but it's what you're told. And so they've effectively created this monopoly. And all of these government monopolies, all these professions, are there for the express purpose of making money. As old Dan Rather says, follow the money. Now, I'm not here to tell you should abolish the medical associations or the legal associations. I don't care. You know, we have a constitution. We have constitutional rights. I can go into court and represent myself. I don't need a lawyer. I can bypass that legal monopoly. I don't need a doctor. I can take care of my own body. So I can bypass the medical monopoly. But you know, most people can't do that. Most people are medical incompetents and legal incompetents, and they have to have these paid professionals. So that's the purpose behind it. It's to reduce you to a feudal serf and to elevate those that are in the professions to godlike status so that they can rule over you and live off of your back, live off of your labor. That's the purpose behind it. And that's the way it works, and it works like a shot. And so that's why we have this contractual relationship. These professionals contract with the government for these monopolies. Of course, it benefits the politicians that create these laws. We call them lobbyists who go to Washington and open up lobbying firms to bribe representatives and senators to enact laws that benefit the monopolies. Like the other day, I forgot who it was, but the other day there was a special rider, a bill was passed on the Defense Appropriations Act. And it was a special rider that says you cannot sue the Eli Lilly Pharmaceutical Company. And I forgot now, I'm trying to think of what the prohibition was. It was over something there that Eli Lilly had, you know, caused some potential damages, and the Bush people are closely associated with Eli Lilly, and so this representative goes in and he put this rider on the bill so that if you're damaged by the Eli Lilly company, you can't sue them. That's a monopoly that's passed on. Under the common law, you'd sue them because they caused you damage. Under our Constitution, you'd sue them because you have a right to recover. You have a constitutional right. And now, I mentioned this earlier, auto finance companies and the bank credit card companies are putting in clauses in their contracts that eliminate the Seventh Amendment. You can't sue them. You're agreeing to binding arbitration. That's law by contract. You just saw this the other day. Congress enacted new standards for bankruptcy. They did that for the banking industry. You see, bankruptcy is a counterfeit of the year of release. So we have this year of release and jubilee years, and you'll see that in Leviticus chapter 25. And debts have to be forgiven once every 7 years. Well, we counterfeited the year of release with bankruptcy, and now the banks went into the Congress through their lobbying operations and said, hey, listen, we need changes to that so we can stick it to these deadbeat people who max out their credit cards and don't pay their debts. We can't have that. We can have Enron. We can have United Airlines bankrupt and screw all of their employees out of their pensions. That's fine. There's no problem with that. But my God, we can't have people running out here maxing out their credit cards and then sticking it to Bank of America. That's called corporate fascism. Now, again, I'm not here to tell you that I'm for or against it, or that you ought to write to your congressman. I'm here to tell you that there is a solution to that. If you'd practice private business under the Mosaic law pursuant to our common law and our Constitution, you wouldn't have these kind of problems. You wouldn't have a credit card. You wouldn't have an auto loan. You wouldn't work for United Airlines, and you wouldn't have a pension program at United Airlines for United Airlines to screw you out of. You wouldn't have a 401k or a Krogh plan. You wouldn't have an account in the bank, and you wouldn't have any insurance. I know it's un-American not to have insurance and money in the bank, but I'm just telling you that God was never an American to start with. And God is un-American. And he practices and advocates strict liability in place of limited liability, which we call insurance today. And that's the way that game is played. And so, anyway, the moral to the story here, Raymond, is that the sources of information that you are asking for, I think I've given you in great abundance. I think I've proven my case. I think if I was in federal court, I would be ready to rest my case. I've brought in my witnesses. I brought in Bouvier, Amger, Corpus Juris, and the court cases to support it, and then the definitions. But I want to sum this up. I got a little story I want to tell you about famous quotations on money. You know, we have a lot of Americans that were pretty famous people, and they made some quotations based upon money. And in the final analysis, the reason that we have this deviation from our Constitution into corporate business and into Social Security and driver's licenses. Now picture this. From 1787 to 1900, let's just take that 113-year period, we Americans became the wealthiest, most powerful people in the world, politically, economically, militarily, and industrially. We started out as 13 backward nations, you know. You know, today they call them third world nations. The United States of America was a backward third world nation in 1787. In 113 years, we became number one. And you know we did it without Social Security? That we did it without a Federal Reserve Bank and paper money. We did all of that with freedom of choice and no public schools. We did that without driver's licenses, welfare, food stamps, and a safety net. And I'm just telling you, that's the history of it. Now, I know that today, the average American, if he had to live without Social Security, if he didn't have a bank and a checking. You know, the average guy probably couldn't pay his bills without a checking account. I don't deny that. And I'm not suggesting that you people should get rid of your checking accounts or Social Security or your welfare and food stamps. You people would probably starve to death without it. But there was a time in America when your forebears could live without it. And they could start off with a third world nation status and create the wealthiest, most powerful nation in the world. They turned it over to you. And you people have put the United States of America into debt. You've put yourselves into debt. You've created the Patriot Act, the Homeland Security Act, and a socialist welfare state converted to communism, and now you're on the brink of national insolvency. And you've done that in 50 years. What it took your forefathers 113 years to create, you destroyed in 50 years. And I don't doubt it. I don't think that the average American could survive in the atmosphere under the liberty, the total freedom that your great-great-granddad had in 1895. I don't think that you people could survive in that atmosphere. You need a welfare state. But when this welfare state collapses, I haven't got a clue as to what you people are going to do. You ought to be thinking about that. Well, we'll take a look here at famous quotations on money when we come back. Meanwhile, let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. It's sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember that the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide on the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school, just go to our website, georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Keep in mind that the law school teaches family law, sometimes called divorce law, marriage and divorce, tax law, income tax, Social Security, property tax, courtroom strategy and procedure, that's how to go into court and defend yourself. Business law, how to make money without belonging to the Social Security system. Agricultural law, how to make $100,000 on 25 acres or less per year. Civil rights, how to protect your rights under the Constitution from attacks by police and public officials. And biblical law, from the scriptural perspective. That's called the Mosaic Law. 133 of them, and what the penalties are. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It's open to individuals by prearrangement. Remember, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, so you can do this by correspondence. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page on the website, georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, so if you want a copy of this program, you can download it free and either on 16 or 32-bit quality CD disc. If you want to replay it on your radio station, you can do that free of charge. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events. And we do it 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free package, just call the law school direct and ask for it. 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And then don't blame the radio station management or staff for the expressions that you hear. That is, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. Don't belong to the announcers or anybody else. And they don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this radio station. So don't blame any of them. Just aim it all at me and blame me and send me your emails and all of your nasty comments and rude statements and take out your vent, hatred, and anger on me. Just me, little Georgie. Don't get mad at anybody else. And then if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call direct 417-273-4967 and vent your rage and anger. if you have any. Did you know the famous quotations on money? Did you know that Thomas Jefferson said something about money one time? He said that if the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their currency, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent that their fathers conquered. That was Thomas Jefferson, our third president. He didn't have much good to say about banks and bankers either, nor about corporations. Not that corporations and banks are per se illegal. I mean, after all, I'm not opposed to banks and banking. But the banks and banking have become all-powerful. And like anybody that's given too much power, they can't use it. And they can't use it for the public good or the public benefit. They use it for their own personal, private, selfish gain. And as a result of that, they cause a lot of harm. If you want to get out from under that harm, then you have to get out from under that banking monopoly. Banks have a monopoly, just like doctors have a monopoly. Lawyers have a monopoly. You know, you have to get to a point where you can handle your medical affairs yourself, your legal affairs, your banking affairs. In other words, you have to become personally competent in banking, medicine, and law. If you want to get out from under those monopolies, you have to become competent. And if you don't want to do that, well, then I guess you have to be a ward and you have to have a guardian. Well, Jefferson went on to say, he said, "I hope we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of the moneyed corporations which dare already to challenge our government to trial of strength and bid defiance to the laws of our country." That was from Thomas Jefferson's letter to George Logan from November of 1860. Andrew Jackson, 7th President of the United States. So here's what he had to say to the money changers who approached him in the drawing room of the White House. He said, "Gentlemen, I have had men watching you for a long time, and I'm convinced that you have used the funds of the bank to speculate in the breadstuffs of the country. When you won, you divided the profits amongst you, and when you lost, you charged it to the bank. You tell me that if I take the deposits from the bank and annul its charter, I shall ruin 10,000 families. That may be true. But, gentlemen, that's your sin. Should I let you go on, you will ruin 50,000 families, and that would be my sin. You are a den of vipers and thieves, and I have determined to rout you out, and by the eternal God, I will rout you out." That was a time in America when our presidents and our political leaders understood money and banking and understood the problem with it, the monopoly that goes along with it. And they protected us from it. Today, that's no longer true. James A. Garfield is reported to have said, quote, "Whoever controls the volume of money in any country is absolute master of all industry and commerce." And after all, that's the purpose behind this banking monopoly. It's to control industry and commerce. And that's where the Commerce Clause comes in from our Constitution. See, your founding fathers put in this Achilles heel called the Commerce Clause. Commerce Clause. And it gives Congress the power to regulate commerce, trade, commerce, business, and industry affecting a public interest. And anytime you join it, they can regulate it. And that's what Wickard versus Filburn was all about. Wickard versus Filburn, decided back about 1942 or 3. And the Supreme Court said, "It's hardly lack of due process or equal protection of the law for government to regulate that which it subsidizes." And any time, boys and girls, that we take a subsidy, we can be regulated and controlled. And regulation and control comes from law. And those laws are predicated upon contract. We volunteer for it. We join the Army, we go down and get a driver's license, we go down and we sign up for Social Security. Don't get mad now at the Social Security Administration or the IRS or the other government bureaucracies who are out here throwing you in jail for tax evasion when you don't pay your taxes. You signed up for it, you agreed to it, and then you reneged on the contract. In the final analysis, when you're being prosecuted in court, you're being prosecuted for breach of contract. Criminal prosecution in the final analysis is breach of contract. You didn't do something you were supposed to do, or you did something that you agreed not to do. And somebody's going to write me an email now or a letter, and they're going to say, "But I didn't know that." Go back to the lessons on adhesion contracts. You don't have to know. You don't have to know. And you can contract your rights away. Your rights follow contract. You know, you can sign the contract and join the Army, and you can waive your constitutional and your Bill of Rights. You can waive them. In 1700, old Mayor Amschel Rothschild said, "You permit me to issue and control the money of a nation, and I care not who makes its laws." Thomas Jefferson said, "I believe that banking institutions are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies." You believe that, Thomas Jefferson? I believe that Bank of America and Chase Manhattan are more dangerous to our liberties than standing armies. That's your third president of the United States. That's the guy that wrote the Declaration of Independence. Now, Dr. R.E. Search said that when the Babylonian civilization collapsed, 3% of the people owned all of the wealth. When old Persia went down to destruction, 2% of the people owned all of the wealth. When ancient Greece went down to ruin, 0.5% of the people owned all of the wealth. When the Roman Empire fell by the wayside, 2,000 people owned the wealth of the civilized world. And it is said at this time less than 2% of the people of America control 90% of the wealth of America. Wealth in America is being concentrated into monopolies. Huge monopolies and colossal reservoirs of wealth, so says the Protocols of the Learned Elders. Aristotle had something to say about usury, as does the Bible. But you know, we Americans have decided that we're going to practice usury, and that God didn't know what he was talking about when he outlawed interest. Aristotle said, "Money being naturally barren, to make it breed money is preposterous and a perversion from the end of its institution, which was only to serve the purpose of exchange and not of increase. Usury is most reasonably detested as the increases arise from the money itself and not by employing that money to the purpose for which it was intended." You know, the only purpose for money is to facilitate the exchange of goods and services. That's what it's there for. See, when you come here and you want a cow, and I say, "Well, I want you to give me a horse," if you don't have a horse, pretty hard for us to make a trade for a cow for a horse. So somebody invented money and said, "Well, look, let's all agree to take money, and we'll use gold and silver as money." So when somebody wants to buy one of Gordon's cows, he brings in 3 or 4 ounces of gold, and he buys one of Gordon's cows with the gold. Gordon takes the gold out and buys a horse with the 4 or 5 ounces of gold. The gold then is the facilitator of the trade of the horse and the cow through a third party, and we use gold. We all agree that gold is the medium. And that's because it's fairly light and easy and portable, and we can move it around. Well, we can move it around a lot easier than horses and cows. So that's why we use money. Now, somebody woke up one day and said, "Well, gee, why don't we charge a percent of the medium of exchange for lending that medium of exchange?" God said, "No, don't do that." Then somebody woke up and said, hey, I got paper. Paper is lighter than gold. Deposit the gold in the vault and just use these paper evidences and go out and buy, sell, and trade with those. And we can still practice usury and interest with them. We call those stocks, bonds, mortgages, and commercial paper today. Strictly prohibited in Scripture. In Leviticus 25, take you no usury of him or increase, but fear your God, that your brother may live with you. You shall not give him any money upon usury, nor lend him any victuals for increase. Deuteronomy 23, verse 19, you shall not lend upon usury to your brother, usury of money, usury of victuals, usury of anything that is lent upon usury. Now take a look at the IRS. You go down and get a Social Security number, a taxpayer ID number. You go out and use Federal Reserve notes. You use stocks and bonds, negotiable instruments and mortgages. You buy, sell, and trade and make profit. You got to pay taxes, and if you don't pay your taxes on time, you got to pay interest. You got to pay interest on the taxes that you didn't pay. You got to pay a penalty along with the interest. Government does not follow Leviticus 19. Or Leviticus 25 or Deuteronomy 23. They don't practice the Scripture. In fact, it's government that threw the Scripture out of your public schools, remember? And you call government good, you call government your friend. And it was government that threw the Ten Commandments and God and the Bible out of your public institutions. And you call that good? Well, all right, boys and girls. I think it's going to come back and bite you in the butt. John Adams wrote to Thomas Jefferson in 1787, the year the Constitution was enacted. He said that all of the perplexities, confusion, and distress in America arise not from defects in their Constitution or Confederation, not from want of honor or virtue, so much as from the downright ignorance of the nature of coin, credit, and circulation. John Adams said, you know what the problem in America is? You people don't understand money. And you let the government give this monopoly away to the Federal Reserve Bank, a cartel of private bankers. Now, these private bankers, in turn, create the policies. These policies, in turn, are enacted into laws by Congress, which creates all of these monopolies that oppress us, like insurance and medicine and law and on it goes. Now, I'm not opposed to lawyers. Why don't we just have a free marketplace for the exchange of services and ideas? If you're a trained lawyer and a professional, you should be smarter and better than me, and you're probably worth more than me. So I shouldn't be any competition to you at all, should I? But you lawyers out there sitting there saying, well, we're not going to let that Gordon go out here and practice law. Why, we couldn't have that. Why, that's competition. We don't want that. So you have to belong to these monopolies. And if you're just a wage earner driving truck and you don't belong to the monopoly, then you don't make the kind of money that the monopolists make. And, of course, these monopolies are running around the country convincing you, the truck drivers and housewives, that you can't live without them. You can't live without the medical monopoly. And you've heard me mention this a time or two. Let me do it again. You get cancer, so you're not feeling good. And you go to the doctor, and the doctor does some tests on you. He says, well, you've got cancer. You got cancer. And You say, well, thank God I came to you, Doc, because you could tell me what I have. Now, if you'd have come to me and you said, well, I'm not feeling good, and I said, well, I'm not a doctor and I can't do all these expensive tests, so it isn't going to cost you a lot of money for these tests, but if you're not feeling good, one of two things, you're either poisoned, you're toxic, or two, you're starving, you've got a nutritional deficiency, so why don't we go to work on detoxifying your body and feeding you? So why don't we put you on whole raw milk, and why don't we give give you some activated charcoal and why don't we take you off pork and fat and shellfish, and why don't we give you whole grains and nuts and fruits, and let's see if that doesn't straighten that out. And you'd look at me and you'd say, well, Gordon, you're stupid. Why you can't even do a test and tell me what's wrong with me. But I went to the medical doctor, and he told me what was wrong with me. I got cancer. So I said, okay. Then what'd the doctor tell you? He says, well, the doctor said he doesn't know what causes cancer, and he can't cure it, but for $100,000, he says he can keep me alive for about 18 more months. Now, you people are serious. You got degrees after your name, many of you. Many of you people have been to college. Now listen, you go to the doctor, he says, well, I can tell you what's wrong with you. You got cancer, you got arthritis, you got rheumatism, you got muscular dystrophy, you got multiple sclerosis. You come to George Gordon, you say, well, I got these symptoms. I say, I don't know what the hell that is. I can see you're sick, I can see you're yellow, I can see you're jaundiced, and I can tell you from the Bible, I can tell you from the scripture what's wrong with you. You're either one, poisoned, or two, you're starving. Or it could be that you're doing both. You're starving and being poisoned. So here's what we got to do. We got to follow the instructions from God. We got to stop eating pig, fat, blood, shellfish. And we got to eat whole, raw foods. You ask me, what's wrong with you? I say, you're starving or you're toxic. You're poisoned. I can tell you what's wrong with you. I'm not a doctor. I've been to medical school. I don't have any degrees, and I don't have any letters after my name, but I'm not brain dead. I can tell you, you're sick. You're a sick puppy. All right. Now, the doctor says, I don't know what's wrong with you. I'm ahead of the doctor. I can tell you what's wrong with you. You're sick, and you're sick because you're poisoned or because you're starving. The doctor, he can't tell you that. He don't know that, and he'll tell you that. I don't know what's wrong with it. I can tell you what you got. You got the symptoms of cancer. Now, can the doctor heal you? He says, no, I can't cure you. I don't know what the hell's the matter with you. And you ask me, well, Gordon, can you cure him? I said, no, I can't. Only your immune system can cure you, partner. George Gordon doesn't have any healing miracles in my puny, bony little hands. But I know what's wrong with you. You're sick. And I know how to cure you. We got to feed you and stop poisoning you. But I can't cure you, but your immune system can. The doctor says, I got to have $100,000 to cure you. And I say, well, it doesn't cost you anything. You know, because I'm just telling you that this is the way this works. And I got it right from the Bible, so you don't need to pay me anything. It doesn't cost you $100,000. And food's, you know, fairly cheap. You know, it doesn't cost you a whole bunch. It doesn't cost you a hell of a lot more to go out here and buy raw food than it does to buy manufactured food. In fact, I think that the manufactured food that you're buying in the supermarket costs more than the raw food that would heal your body on the outside. Now let me ask you this question. Let's suppose you got a car and ain't running too good. You take the car into Mr. Goodwrench, you know? And you say, Mr. Goodwrench, do you know what's wrong with my car? And he says, no, I don't know what's wrong with it. You ask him, can you fix it? He says, no, probably not. But for $25 an hour, I'll work on your car till you run out of money. And that's what this medical doctor's telling you. I don't know what causes cancer. I don't know how to cure it. But for $100,000, I'll treat you till you run out of money. Then the insurance company comes along and says, hey, listen, that medical service over there costs a lot of money. And because it costs a lot of money, you should have health insurance. So you should pay a lot of money to us guys in the form of premiums so that you can have the money to go over to the doctor who cannot cure your cancer and doesn't know what causes your cancer, but he needs $100,000 to treat it. So we'll give you the $100,000 to treat the cancer for 18 months until you die. And you say, well, I wouldn't take my car to a mechanic that didn't know what was wrong with it and couldn't fix it, but you'll go to a doctor that doesn't know what's wrong with you and can't fix it and pay him a whole lot more money. Now, can you tell me why that makes any sense? Huh? All you people out there with letters after your names and college degrees, explain that, could you? Because I'm kind of a loss. I had a guy here one time, he said, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. And I said, well, don't let me get in the way. My God, don't let me tell you. The guy died at age 47 from a massive heart attack. He was a Texas farmer. And I told him pig wasn't good for him, and he said, nobody's going to tell me what to eat. By God, he's right. Now, nobody telling him what to eat today either. Buried 6 feet under. And he didn't hurt my feelings any, and I couldn't give a rat's ass less whether he lives or dies. And I'm not really concerned about you or anybody else. But you know, people pay their money, and they come to this school, and they want to know the answers. And when I give them the answers, oftentimes they get upset with me, and they get angry, and nobody's going to tell me what to eat. And I told this guy, I said, you know, you paid your money, and you came here, and you wanted to know the answer to the riddle, and I told you. Now, if you didn't want to know, why'd you ask? If you don't want to know, don't ask. And I won't tell you. Now, there's a couple other neat statements in here that deals with this thing of information. Remember old Swinton, you know, John Swinton, the editor of the New York Times? He stated at the annual dinner of the American Press Association. Now, this citation says in 1914. Well, I chased that out, and it wasn't. It was in 1880. He said, there's no such thing as an independent press in America. If we accept that of the little country towns, and then you know this and I know it, not a man among you dares to utter his honest opinion. Were you to utter it, you know beforehand it would never appear in print. It is the duty of a New York journalist to lie, distort, to revile, to toady at the feet of mammon, to sell his country and his race for his daily bread, or what amounts to the same thing as salary. We are the tools of vassals and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the marionettes. These men pull the strings and we dance. Our time and our talents, our lives, our practices are all the property of these men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Tain't exactly what he said, but it was pretty close to it. And that's what you get from Dan Rather, Tom Brokaw, and all these other, you know, Jim Lehrer and all the rest of these media puppets. They come out here and they tell us what we're supposed to hear. We believe it because we hear it and see it in print. I would contend that it's time for us to make some meaningful and intelligent changes and choices. That's just my personal opinion. That's the way I see it. And these choices are made when you go down here and you sign up for Social Security. Now, whether you call it a contract or you call it a one-eyed, one-horned, one-eared, flying purple people-eater, I don't care what you call it. You can call it a civet cat or you can call it a skunk. You can call it a contract or a license or a tax. You can hang whatever label you want on it, but it's bad for you. Social Security is a ripoff, and I've demonstrated that on this program over and over again. Again, you know, if that's what you want to participate in, that's your choice in life. But there's a way out of it. You don't have to participate in Social Security, driver's licenses, business licenses, you know, monopolies. You know, there's private business out there. We have a constitution. We have rights. We have the Ten Commandments that can replace the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. And I contend that when we practiced the Ten Commandments in the United States of America, we did a hell of a lot better as a nation and as individuals in our society than we're doing today under the Ten Commandments, under the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto, which is why I suggest that we go back to the Ten Commandments. All right, boys and girls, we're out of time. We'll have to take up a new topic here next week. Thanks, Raymond, for writing your question. We answered it. Told you where the bear does it. And so now we'll go on to something else starting tomorrow night. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about The Law Hour and The Law School, please go to the website georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct, 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the internet. All right, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, of course, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.